You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer, and I specialize in food and science. Now, today's podcast is one of our Future Gazing Trends series, and this one focuses on the ingredients trends that we think will or maybe might take center stage in 2021. So expect to hear about health and well-being, I guess, environmental concerns, clean label, COVID-19, and perhaps more unexpected key drivers to ingredient trends in 2021. Joining us to discuss this are Carol Bingley, Technical Specialist, Product Development, RSSL.
Hello.
Tony Gay, Head of Technical Sales and NPD, Nutrition, Prinova.
Hello there.
And Anna Cheely, Senior Scientist and Chef at Calsec.
Hi, everyone.
Now, Carol, let's start with you. A lot's happened in 2020, and I know we don't want to drag ourselves through COVID-19 again, but let's talk about consumers first. How has the stuff that's gone on in 2020 affected consumer thinking?
So I think in lots of ways there's been changes, but I think for the areas that I work in, one of the key changes will be people wanting to take more control over their health. And obviously the food that they eat plays a huge part of that. So looking to whether they're looking to lose some weight based on some of the advice that we've had, or whether they're looking to take a sort of more proactive approach to improving their immunity and maybe building up their resistance to anything that comes their way. So I think
is that because of anxiety, neurosis? Is it that with COVID-19 we're faced with the concept of our own mortality more, or is it just a bit of navel gazing?
I think it is that uncertainty, and it, you know, this year we've had a lot of things taken out of our hands. I think a lot of people have said they feel a bit powerless, and actually this is an area that we can take a little bit control over, and you can look after yourself a little bit better and make sure you eat a little bit healthier. And I know in the early days, people were going down the comfort eating route. You know, we've seen a huge journey, or sorry to use the journey word, but, you know, in terms of people wanting to kind of make themselves feel better by eating things that they're familiar with and take them back to their childhood. But now we've been through that, and we're now seeing that people are actually thinking, well, I can't keep doing this because, you know, this has gone on a lot longer than we think, and the weight gain side of it is possibly not good for me. So what can I do to change that?
So, Carol, have you put on weight during lockdown, or have you lost weight?
I've stayed pretty much the same.
Have you now, yeah. Tony? What about you? I've gone both ways myself. I went up in weight, and then I've seemed to have got a bit of a health kick. What about you, Tony?
I actually sort of maintain weight as well. I mean, I've been doing home workouts and yoga sessions and all those kind of things as well. And I think that sort of goes in line with, you know, Carol's comments about people being a bit more aware of, you know, fitness and health. Even in times such as this, you know, they're trying to find ways to keep themselves healthy and carry them through with a strong sort of immune system.
And Anna, what about you? I mean, how about your health and well-being? But also, you know, have you seen this sort of concept of people kind of looking to themselves and feeling out of control affecting how the industry works?
I think right now, myself, I'm doing pretty well. That's not to say, with the winter coming up here and being in Michigan, it's actually, that's probably going to propose more of an issue for many people in the U.S. having, you know, the winter come back, and that's when it's more difficult in general to stay on.
That's what people say. I usually wrap myself in Hessian and slap on the duck fat ready for winter myself.
Yeah, exactly. Like the duck fat, we call it sometimes, you put your winter coat on. So we can see possibly something. We could see something in the next few months. Ask that question. Maybe in April, March, you might get a different answer. You know, I really think with this summer, it's been easier for people to feel like they have more control. While gyms are mostly shut down in each state, it's obviously a little different, but people think they can go out for a walk. They can socially distance walk, things like that. They can do exercises and feel a little better about their mental and physical well-being outside. I think, just as Carol mentioned, I think that control is going to change in the next few weeks, in the next few months. So I think there's going to be another rude awakening of trying to figure out how we balance mental and physical health and how they intersect. So I think it's up to us in the food industry to help them, to help us all through that globally. And I'm, you know, have positive thoughts in the future, but I think it is up to us to really help people with new products being developed on, give them some sense of control, some indulgence, but maybe some safe moderation indulgence.
Yeah. So Carol, if the, I mean, the length of time that we've had lockdown and awareness of COVID-19 is both a huge amount of time and, in terms of sort of how businesses roll, quite a short amount of time. Have you seen it already affect your work in a fundamental way?
In some ways, yes. We were already doing quite a bit of work in the plant-based area, but I'm seeing more and more requests coming in terms of developing new products in the plant-based area. So, and I think that fits, you know, people often say that health is their main reason for starting to cut down on meat and move to more plant-based products. And so I think this trend's just taken off really over the last 6 months, even more than it had done over the past couple of years.
So if you're going to identify consumer trends that affected you, you'd put sort of health and well-being at the top, or plant-based, and, or are they interchangeable?
Not interchangeable, but there's a close link there, I'd say. Yeah. Mm.
And how's it affecting your work? So you are now, are you literally in the midst of developing new products using new ingredients, or just shifting the balance of what you use?
Some of the work we're doing is using new ingredients. Some of it is using existing ingredients in different ways. So yeah, probably a balance of both, really.
Mm. So go on then, tell us about the new stuff. So what ingredients are being used now that we didn't really see so much perhaps last year?
Well, I guess on the protein side, and this is something that obviously started a long time before COVID was ever heard of, but new protein sources that are coming through. So some of the legume-based proteins like chickpea, and also improved versions of the existing proteins. So to maybe improve the flavor profile or enhance the solubility of the protein to make them more user-friendly and create products which ultimately give the taste and texture that the consumer is looking for.
And what is it that consumers are demanding? Is it just alternatives? Is it novelty? Is it a sense of sustainability? What are the trends that you're seeing?
So I think this first wave of plant-based vegan products has very much focused on being a very easy swap for the meat eater to take out one product and put in something that looks and tastes as close to the original as possible.
The meat-alike kind of concept.
Yes, yeah. And I think that's an understandable concept, really. People don't want to take that risk. They don't want to buy something and then find that they don't like it, goes in the bin, it's a waste of money. So it makes it a much easier step into this kind of new area for them. But I think now we are starting to see a few products come along which are introducing a few little changes in terms of new ingredients, new tastes, new ideas, but could still fill the same gap on the plate as the, you know, the meat or the fish or whatever they're looking to replace.
And what are the challenges that face manufacturers when it comes to these sort of plant-based meat alternatives? And what is it that helps solve these challenges?
Oh, lots of challenges. You're trying to tick so many boxes with these products. So taste and texture, obviously, top of the list, as they are for everything. The product, as I mentioned, people are looking sort of for healthier alternatives to the products that they're taking out of their diet. So the products have to deliver on a nutritional basis as well. I think you mentioned sustainability. So that's something that consumers have an interest in. and clean label, which again is a trend across the whole food industry. But
yeah,
I think we've had quite a focus on it in the plant-based area, because again, these products have this image of being sort of healthier, and really having a long ingredient list maybe is slightly strange fit with those products.
Yeah, and inevitably they often do, don't they? So clean label we've been talking about for quite some time now, but you think it's still really strong and important?
Yeah, I don't think it's gone away, and I can't see it going away anytime soon.
I think you're right, it's not going to go away, it's true. Yeah. And what about concepts like traceability? I mean, we talked a lot over the last couple of years about blockchain technology and traceability and open ledgers, so that, you know, the consumer can be much more confident. Does that feature, and how much does that concept come into the ingredients industry?
It does feature. I think it's probably the more committed consumers who are interested there. So I don't think it's a general population interest. I think there are specific groups who are very interested in knowing more about where their ingredients come from and the traceability. Mm. Others just want to have that feeling that, you know, the company is doing their best, and, you know, it's all ticked and covered for them, so that they're not going to spend
the
time.
They love that it happens, that they don't particularly want to invest in themselves.
They don't need the detail.
Yeah. But in a sense, that sort of that nebulous concept of faith is quite important, I guess.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of what I've seen with a lot of these, particularly startup companies, they're creating that by, on their websites, giving a lot of detail about the ingredients. So, you know, you may have, I don't know, 15, 20 ingredients in the product because you're trying to deliver a certain taste or texture. But if you tell the consumer why that ingredient's in there and where that ingredient comes from, it makes them feel a little bit more comfortable with that product, and it gets them on side.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's move on to Tony. Now, Tony, let's think about this sort of move to plant-based. There's loads of innovation on plant protein side, and particularly around sports nutrition. And I think I'm right in saying that sports nutrition is renowned for dairy proteins, you know, whey protein, things like that. Now, this is tricky, isn't it? Dairy replacement is a very complex and technical process. What developments do you think we can expect to see with new ingredients next year?
So from a plant-based perspective, a lot of the proteins individually will be somewhat lacking in terms of the digestibility and also the amino acid profile. Mm. So what we do see now is that brands will combine multiple vegetable protein sources in order to achieve like an optimal amino acid spectrum that will be more comparable to whey protein. So they might have like 3 to 5 different protein sources within the formulation that will boost up all these aminos individually to get, say, the higher amounts of branched chain amino acids you would associate with whey protein. And then along with that is also some of these proteins have a somewhat functional element. For instance, like a watermelon seed protein that will have a smooth mouthfeel to it. And quite often,
I haven't heard of that yet. Watermelon seed. That's brilliant. I want some.
So this one actually has that sort of creamy consistency when you add it into a protein blend. And that, you know, is what also consumers are looking for. If they typically take in a dairy protein shake, they want something that will taste or have a mouthfeel that's relatively similar. So having inclusions of these types of proteins have that smooth consistency when combined with others to give you a bit more of a dairy shake feel.
And does the nature of the sports nutrition sector, you're talking about blends of different proteins to get the amino acid balance right. Now, that means multiple ingredients. Does the sports nutrition area tolerate less of a clean label concept? You know, do people not mind so much about having a multitude of different ingredients?
I think that is correct to a certain extent. But when a sports nutrition brand is kind of moving into the plant-based space, they are looking for maybe a more of a natural angle. So this could be, you know, the natural sweeteners, flavors, colors, and things like that, which would become more paramount from a plant-based option, which you may not necessarily see in the regular lines for, you know, dairy proteins or amino acid type drinks. But, you know, there is that aspect of consumers looking for the cleanest possible labeling. And I think, you know, if there is still a list of different vegetable proteins, they are still considered clean, although there's maybe 3 to 5 as opposed to just one. So,
And what about, I mean, what's the most difficult dairy ingredient to replace?
I think, you know, whey protein would be the one. And that's because it's typically very, you know, soluble. The mouthfeel is creamy in consistency, and it's renowned for high bioavailability in terms of how your body assimilates it. And then also that amino acid spectrum where BCAAs, branched chain amino acids, are sort of considered the call out that people are looking for in a protein. So those kind of four elements of whey protein being considered superior is the difficult ones to achieve in a plant-based option.
Yeah. And so looking at sports nutrition specifically, what do you see as the trends that affect change for 2021?
I mean, I see in terms of the dietary sort of choices that people are, you know, even doing sort of going to the gym or maybe doing more sort of recreational sports like cycling, triathlons, etc. There is this sort of pursuit towards flexitarianism, so where they're not necessarily going to substitute everything in their diet for plant-based options, but they are considering now to have maybe, you know, 3 or 4 meals in a week is going to be plant-based options. They might consider a plant-based protein shake instead of a dairy one. And I think this is from a multiple areas of what's driving it. Is some of it is environmental. You know, people are considering plant-based options maybe a better choice for the environment. But also from a health awareness point of view, you know, not having too much animal proteins is now considered, you know, maybe not as good for your health. But having a balance is a good way to move forward. So you see a lot more brands that are more sports, you know, nutrition focused coming out with plant-based options, whether it's a powdered shake, whether it's a bottle ready to drink, whether it's a protein bar. They're all coming out now with options that are catering for the flexitarian movement.
And is that just the sort of the merry march of change? I mean, the you know, sports nutrition is a relatively dynamic market anyway. Or is any of this a reaction to events over the last 9 months?
There can be in some elements of, you know, the COVID situation having an effect, particularly when you look at meal replacement type products, which are not necessarily in sports nutrition, but they are chosen by sports nutrition enthusiasts. And then you see like brands like Huel or Soylent, which are typically renowned for being plant-based meal replacements, have definitely seen a surge increase in sales during this time. And I think it's because those products will also have a balanced amino sort of vitamin and fats and, you know, a nutritional profile, which is going to help people to satisfy their dietary needs without having to really think about it. So they'll use a meal replacement in the day just to make sure I get all the vitamins I need to keep me strong and healthy and my immune system functioning well.
Okay, well, I think that's fascinating. Now, let's turn to Anna. Anna, you've been very well behaved and very patient with us, so sorry about the long wait to get to you. Now, you're a chef as well as a scientist. Have you been cooking differently because of events in 2020?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, just as many people across the globe, but especially in the U.S., been diving more so into baking bread, working tirelessly with my sourdough starter, something I actually started in January, but I had extra time to get a little deeper in. And I think that's because I have this extra time that, you know, one of my main hobbies is to cook anyways. So I just tried to challenge myself in some way. And obviously, I'm rewarded, hopefully, by that dish or that bread coming out well. So that's mainly how I've changed my cooking. I just have tried to risk a little bit more versus staying safe, convenience food, because I do have a little bit more of that time, but also because I've been really missing traveling, trying new foods, and going to restaurants, even locally, and trying new dishes. So that's something I think that's just trying to fill that gap for myself.
Okay. And I think this is a fundamental, really, in terms of a shift in attitudes. Can the ingredients industry take this on board and incorporate it into what they do? Or is this basically loosening the reins so the people do it themselves at home?
I think it really, it's changed the way my job has been going since March and the type of projects we've had coming in. So instead of keeping with the same projects, our customers have either stopped those and shifted. We see a lot right now in meal kits. So ones that the customer will finish at home, or ones that they'll heat up and they're essentially done. They'll heat up in the microwave and oven. To do those a little more adventurous, they'll offer, you know, different ingredients. So for instance, you know, I've subscribed myself, I'm not sure all of you on the call, to different meal kits in the past, but now we're seeing more alternative protein. So ones where you're like, oh, okay, we'll give one option for alternative protein, or, you know, meat-free, animal protein-free, they have a lot more options, so many more options, paleo, gluten-free, different new fun products that we used to kind of keep for maybe more retail, grocery stores or restaurants or things when we're developing. And I think that's kind of fun. That's something different to look forward to. I myself, as you asked, I'm getting a little tired of my own food. So, you know, ordering a meal kit and seeing like, oh, cool, I saw one the other day, cauliflower and chickpea pasta with a plant-based bolognese. You know, that's something I don't think we saw a year ago.
Send it over. Yeah. I'm ready for it.
No, absolutely. And I'm down for ordering that. And I think it's also a little bit of convenience, but they're also getting a little edgy and more adventurous in those meal kits. And we've had a lot of projects where we're trying to do meal kits for all different type of, you know, meat companies, alternative meat companies, sauce, dressing, seasoning companies. And I'm pretty excited, at least in the US retail, to see all of those, you know, kind of ready packaged, but you go home and cook the whole thing.
This is it's a really interesting subject, because here in the UK, 2 days ago, we had the announcement that Nestlé was taking majority stake in Mindful Chef, which is a big recipe box company. Now, I mean, a lot of these companies have been around for a while, and they've had problems with scalability and profits, and that's why investors have been slightly shy of diving in there. But do you think that this is a fundamental shift in the sense of their value? And how does that relate to the ingredients industry?
You know, I'm not sure how long the shift will take, but I think there will last. But I think there definitely is a shift right now. When all of the meal kits and home chef type meals first came out, it was more of a one-hit wonder, right? You get the coupon, you are excited to do it, and then eventually you go back to your normal. I think right now these companies are surging. A lot of larger CPGs are investing in them, and they're saying that it's going to help them. And I believe at least over the next year or so. I do think it's somewhat of a fundamental shift in the way these product innovators are thinking. So, you know, you're not traveling, you're not able to really as easily go to restaurants. And how do you get new and exciting flavors? In the US, we're a little used to eating some of these more classic and comforting flavors in the past few months. I see the shift in the UK being a lot quicker. People are tired, absolutely tired of eating the same boring food. In the US, I think it's taking us a lot longer. But I believe that we're asking, hey, we don't want spaghetti and meatballs. We classic bolognese. We want things like that. And I think that gives the retailers specifically focused on meal kits to really innovate in that space, but also in a way make it safe, because it's, you know, you put it all together, You know, it's, you have faith it's going to be good versus you going and buying things on a list off of some food blog or Pinterest recipe and, you know, it being a complete fail. So I think that gives a lot more power to our companies to really innovate and grab the interest of the consumer.
Do you know what? That's fascinating. I've never actually thought about it in that way because you're right. It's about experimentation with less of a prospect of failure. Now, I've always kind of relished my failures and forced my friends to eat the terrible crap that I've been experimenting with. But you're absolutely right. Most people, you know, can't handle the idea of failing. And what recipe boxes provide is a route to success with something new. So I think that's a very clever point. Now, what about specific ingredients for you that you think we're going to be seeing a lot more of over the next year? What sort of trends are you looking at?
You know, it's a great question. I think one of the ingredients that jumps out to me, and Carol mentioned it, is chickpeas or garbanzo beans. So even apart from the protein of the chickpea and how versatile that is, you know, one thing I've heard is that you can chickpea anything. So that very much touches on authentic and ethnic curries, you know, from India. We can make chickpea tofu. You can have chickpeas in the form of snacks, side dishes. You know, I really think this ingredient will start to soar even more so than we as product developers were used to it. And those working in the food industry on the chef and culinary side have seen the use in the past. And I think along with that, I've seen a lot more use of, we're thinking plant-based proteins or, taking protein and different flours from chickpea and peas. And I think a lot of customers are reading labels. They have more time to read labels. So they're asking, okay, why do I have 14 ingredients to this pasta when the regular version just has, you know, three. So something like hearts of palm used as pasta, or just different ingredients such as jackfruit being used more so in plant.
Oh, I like a bit of jackfruit. Protein. Yeah.
So, you know, you see that's an easy way to use the food as is and really get the consumer excited. We just have to do a little more research with and work with those foods that are just readily available to really cut down on those ingredients on the back of pack.
Yeah. Okay, now let's spread the questions around a little bit more now. So Carol, let's start with you. Have there been any surprises for you about trends and response to trends from the last 9 months of our troubles?
I'm not sure surprises, but I mean that I think every day I see something popping into my inbox about ingredients to boost immunity. And I guess I wouldn't have been seeing that this time last year. And I think, the immune system is so complex and there are lots of different ingredients which may or may not have a benefit. And, yep. You know, it looks to me as though a lot of companies are really trying to explore that area and understand how their ingredients could be used.
Yeah. And other than chickpeas for next year, any other areas of ingredients that's not necessarily the ingredient, but maybe the approach to using them that's going to be different, you think?
Something I'm seeing is sort of more multifunctional ingredients. So rather than just a pure protein, for example, or a pure fiber, it's an ingredient that maybe can contribute color and also contribute some texture. Or maybe I was talking to a supplier a few days ago about a carob protein, and that protein, if you heat it to over 80 degrees, it has some residual locust bean gum within the material, and so it can give you the viscosity. And so I think these ingredients, which don't just do one job in your product, are starting to become more interesting. And again, I suppose it comes back to that clean label, short ingredient list. If you can get one ingredient that can do two or three jobs, then that can be a big help.
Yeah. Now, and Tony, what about you? Anything else? I mean, especially thinking about things like gut health and immunity. Any other developments that you can foresee for the next year?
On the immunity side, maybe for more the plant-based aspect. We've definitely seen an increase in certain ingredients like acerola cherry powder, which people would integrate into formulations. There's also amala berry as well. These are all sort of very high naturally in vitamin C. So people are utilizing them within maybe a smoothie or a premix, which would be fortifying a shake or something like that. We've definitely seen increases in those kind of interests from, you know, both the brand and the consumer point of view. The other side of it is also the whole psychological sort of well-being aspect, and people looking at ingredients that will help them with stress, like ashwagandha or rhodiola. You know, these kind of ingredients have also driven quite significantly in terms of popularity for new formulations so for the last 6 months or so, you know, to help people through that sort of tough time and through the stresses in life in general.
And Anna, now we run the Food Matters Awards every year, and the winner for the new ingredient of the year was Pure Sea Protect, which is a natural source of iodine from seaweed. Do you think that natural products will take more of a central role in fortification and functional ingredients for the next year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been growing over the past decade even. I think as more that we bring it to the consumer and educate them at the same time, they kind of understand that maybe, you know, while fortification is great, you think of pregnancy and things where different life events where you need some fortification of different foods that you're consuming, and that, oh, you know, we need the fortification, but let's go to a more natural source, and let's do something that we can actually help control in the food industry and promote, something like beta carotene, something that I think we're really not that familiar with as consumers in the U.S., that is synthetic versus carrot. So if you just have those labelings that people aren't familiar, that they actually aren't natural. And I think that's the difference between obviously us and you in the UK and in the EU with labeling. But that's one thing that we're constantly surprised. And I'm constantly surprised, having a nutrition background, that, you know, that isn't actually natural, but it's okay to be labeled. So the more we, you know, really focus on that and different other micro nutrients as well, then I think that'll get the consumer more excited. And then they'll just keep looking for those and demanding those products from us as product direct developers.
Okay. Well, now we come to the round robin question. You've each got £10 million of my own personal money to invest in the hottest ingredients trend for 2021. You're not allowed to invest in your own company. What, and you know, preferably an ingredient, what would you buy £10 million worth of in order to make your fortune? Carol, what are you going to spend your £10
million? It's very generous of you.
It's my pleasure.
I would probably be looking in the gut health area. And at the moment, I think probably gut health linked to immunity. Mm-hmm. So I would be probably thinking about things like the yeast beta-glucan ingredients, mm-hmm. Which are showing great potential. So I'd probably be in that sort of area, I think.
Very good. Okay. Tony, where would you put your 10 million?
Well, this might be a complete sort of pie in the sky idea, but it's it would
be... You're going to come at me with watermelon season, aren't you?
Yeah. It would be a vegetable protein that would be clear in solution, neutral tasting, and providing a reasonable amino acid sort of spectrum, particularly for beverage applications. So, yeah, obviously we've seen the dairy movement in shakes and also some waters as well. But I think people would want a plant-based option, and that would do very well in the market if we had something that would be of that sort of side of things, really.
Yeah. So anything specific, or is that a hope for something that might exist?
Well, interestingly, I mean, we talked about chickpea. Maybe that could be something, if that could be processed to deliver that, because it's got a good amino spectrum. Maybe even fava bean as well, which is another trending one, protein, which has been coming into the market too. So one or two of those sources, but as I say, it's a pie in the sky idea, probably.
No, I like it. I like it. Anna, you've got 10 million, which is probably worth about, well, pretty similar to $10 million under the current exchange rates. Where would you invest your 10 million?
Yeah, Tony almost sold me on what he had. If he had the secret in that comment, I would have just tried to invest all the money that I personally have. So on this side, it's probably related more so to what we're seeing. Carol mentioned, you know, thinking about immunity health and anxiety, mental health. So looking at that spectrum of just, hey, how can we help ourselves during this situation that we're in? But further would definitely be CBD and THC extracts, different products. So the issue here in the US is a lot of people are starting to develop products on this. The legality is totally up in the air. But because you're seeing it, because there are products on the market in restaurants, you think of different bars with mixology and in different finished dishes at very nice restaurants, I would most likely, if it was your money, invest in the CBD THC market. it is a little bit of a roulette right now, but yeah. I've seen a lot more emails, a lot more different free sessions on product development and these types of compounds and how to develop flavors with them and different studies looking at the efficacy of just tens and tens of different, emails in the past few months. And it's kind of funny. I did not see that a year ago. So that's where I would put your money.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for throwing my money at the drugs. I know it's not like that. Thank you very much. Well, I thought that was absolutely fascinating. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast brought to you by Food Matters, and you heard from Carol Bingley, Tony Gay, and Anna Cheely, and myself, Stefan Gates. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to apprenticeships. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.